Everyone, I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Empowering Midwifery Education, and I am beyond excited to have legendary Gail Johnson here with us. We're starting a long series of wonderful interviews, and I feel like she's setting the bar very high of what I get to do first in these wonderful series. So, Gail, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, I just love being with all the young midwives because at my age, it's time to pass the torch. But I
Yeah.
can't give it up totally yet
Nope.
because
Don't.
I'm still doing babies. I'm Gail Johnson. I was Canadian born, married an American. Long story short, moved to Texas, became a midwife at 40. Before that, I was a counselor, and I evolved into the calling of midwifery. Because I was doing a lot of work with abused and battered women and shelters, and some of the people in the shelters were pregnant and wanted a class, so I took childbirth classes to become a teacher in the set. And then from there, I moved to in my day, way back in the 60s and seven, well, say 70s anyway. I went to them with the hospital to just be because they didn't have a partner to go with them. And what I saw there horrified me simply because these were women that needed really gentle care and they didn't get it. And so then I was blessed by one of the to be invited to a home birth with some midwives. What I saw there was like an eye-opening experience for me. So when I was blessed by the universe to be sent to Texas with my husband, I found out I could become a direct entry midwife because all my training was not in the sciences, and I didn't want to go back to nursing school at 40
Yeah.
because I couldn't take the residents and the doctors, how I saw women being treated. I didn't want to be in that environment. So I went through the Association of Texas Midwives. After 2 and some years, I became a midwife. Then, because of my age, I had no children to look after, and I could indulge myself 100% in midwifery. And I was a woman's advocate from way back in the 60s when I was breastfeeding and I was in the leche league. I was one, way back then. And so I became politically active in Texas. I ended up serving on the Texas State Board for 6 years because I had the time and the energy. And I didn't have a lot of commitments of family care. So I have just been, what do you call it, an advocate, an activist, very strong on women. Then, when we decided to retire and move to Belize, my husband said, "I'm worried about you. You're going to be bored. What are you going to do? You're not ready for retirement." So I said, "Make me a website." And he said, "What on?" I said, "Make me a website because I love to travel. Make me a website that says, basically, I'll have my bag packed, I'll come." So I became a traveling midwife in 2006 was my first gig, as you call it. And I've been doing that ever since. I've been to 22 countries, catching babies. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I'm still doing it. I have a baby on an island coming up the end of, like, I leave on Wednesday for that. And then in November, I'm going to Australia to do a baby.
So how does that work? Like, do you do a lot of virtual visits and then they see someone local and then you come in town when it's the last month or last 2 months? How does that relationship look?
Well, they have to contact me early because, you get booked, early. But they go and see their care provider there, be that a doctor, a clinic, or a midwife. And they talk to me every month after their meetings. After that, their meetings, we converse, we do that. When I arrive, I do meet their caregiver, and we network, and I've had no troubles. And then I stay with them until they have their baby. And then if they have it early, I have some touristy time. If they're late, I can change the flight ticket. So I'm adaptable about all of that. Again, once again, because I am in a position that I can travel. I don't have a 2-year-old at home that needs me. So being a traveling midwife is a niche. But I want to talk a little bit about the difference between a midwife and you know, the standard care. Now, there are wonderful doctors, there's wonderful nurse midwives, but I have to admit that I am pretty much for 90% of these women, of our women that can have natural birth, I think they should do it out of hospital. Even all the research and evidence-based care is showing that what midwives do, the care we give them, the one-to-one care, you know, medical care is care, but what they need is caring, caring. They need not just care, they need caring. And so that's another reason I guess I like being a senior midwife, because I can sometimes play the role of a mother or a grandmother or an aunt. You know, I can fit into all those categories. But evidence-based care is what midwives are using, I think, mostly. We do intermittent monitoring. We let the women walk around. We do all the things that help the body deliver a nice birth. And but hospitals do protocol-based care. And I understand why they do it, because they have a staff and they don't know their patient. They don't know the needs of that family. So, and they do a lot of births, so they have to do it on a streamlined process. So that's protocol-based care. I don't like it. I like one-to-one individualized care or evidence-based care. And when we do show evidence to the established caregivers, they don't, it changes hard. We all get into habits. Change is hard for them. Oh, they have to have a staff meeting, a committee meeting, and whatever. So we can change. I remember one time we did a big research study in the year 2000 with MANA, and we got a lot of statistics from that, because just what you were talking about a little earlier. And you can show that, and we change. I can change tomorrow morning. And I do. When I find out that, whoa, we shouldn't be doing that anymore, we change tomorrow. And that's a great treasure. We can also change if, even if I share with you a procedure that I might like to do, but you say I don't want you to, man, I can change and I'll find a way around it, but I'll still get the right information. Right? So we need high touch over high tech. And the hospitals have high tech. We have some high tech, more and more, it seems, and some and a lot of high touch. Maybe sometimes today we're losing our high touch, though. I'm beginning to wonder. Some of the new rules and regulations and protocols are working their way into midwifery and home care. And
Well,
when
and
that's
even the burnout is getting more and more. And one of the number one things when a healthcare professional, particularly midwives, are burnt out, you start losing your empathy. You start losing what's the hallmark of being a midwife because of your fear and anxiety and that distance because you're just burnt out. So I wonder if it's a combination of the AI, the technology, the regulations on top of just the, I'm seeing a lot of the midwives, they just have a wall they can't give anymore.
Yes, I can understand that. And there's some mothers that can't give anymore, because now they want to be the perfect mother. For heaven's sakes, I think in my, I tell my kids, I don't think I was a good mother at all. I was always so busy with everybody else. They said, "Oh, Mom, you were a good mother." I said, "No, I didn't ever take you to brownies. I didn't take you to Scouts. I didn't take you to ice skating. I didn't take you. No. You had to get your own way there, because Mom wasn't home." So yeah, I think it's there's a lot of pressure on the young women today that we didn't have. And if you have the fear of losing your license, then you still can't give that individualized care, which is another reason to be a traveling midwife, because everywhere I go, am not registered there.
Well, the question, we just did a Q&A about 3 weeks ago about international midwifery, and the common question people were asking, how does that work with like licensure regulations? And I was shocked when I started doing the research for our Midwifing the Midwife website. All the countries, I think 95% of them have no midwifery regulations. So I think that was a common question. People had like the fear and anxiety, like, how will I be approached if I consider doing international midwifery outside of mission work that's structured and set up for them? I would love for you to expand. When you hinted, you talked to the doctor, you have certain set of expectations if that's a good fit to work with.
Well, I can't really share all.
Yeah.
But I would in different circumstances.
But yes, but high level, or resources to go to, or obviously we can direct them to you for more private conversations. But that was a common thing people would ask, how to understand and navigate, because there aren't a lot of resources available. So we'll definitely send them to your site and email. Too.
Well, I did write a book on being a traveling midwife.
Excellent.
So anyway, it's called Tales of a Traveling Midwife. But and it's just a fun little book. See, but just a fun little book.
Totally. I'm going to make sure we find the link and send everybody to get that. Yes.
But again, though, being a traveling midwife is a niche because you can't have, you can't have family needs at home so much.
Yes.
So, but it's a beautiful career for a midwife that's retired. Now you get to travel, because when you have, this is one thing, I was a businesswoman too, but one other thing I learned because I became a midwife at 40 and I already had a successful business. And if I had one client, I couldn't go anywhere for the whole month, because 2 weeks early, 2 weeks late, can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Can't have a glass of wine, because you never know. And, so then I decided, in for a penny, in for a pound. So I built a pretty good big practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have to stay home for one, I might as well stay home for six. But again, I was 40. I didn't have children to look after.
Yeah.
So again, each of us brings to our practice, so we don't burn out, what we can do. If you can only help one woman a month because you have three little kids at home, you're still helping one woman change her whole life. You're changing her whole life. You do not, every woman I meet when I'm traveling a lot that's my age or, in their, way younger, in their 50s, they still remember their births. And when they find, and you know this, when they find out that you're a midwife, they start telling you their story. Mm-hmm. And most of it is not good, mm-hmm. because it was impressed. And if trauma is impressed, you express it in your life. And so when trauma, a birthing trauma, gets impressed, it changes your viewpoint on many things. I think it's one of the reasons I became a midwife, in hindsight of how my first birth was when I was 17. So I don't want to get into that story now, but in hindsight, I think that is how I became who I am and such a woman's advocate.
Yeah.
I didn't consciously connect the two. But now it's the same thing. If you give one woman a gentle birth, you may forget her 15 years later, but she doesn't forget you.
No. The power we have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we give so much of ourselves that I can understand we get burned out, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, you got to look after yourself too. And there's many, many ways to do that. But that's another talk too.
Yeah, I know the self-care and the psychology behind midwives feel I'm a bad midwife because I put myself first. I said my mantra my life coach has given me is self-aware is not selfishness. Like, you are better for everybody else when you fill up your cup. And how can you give when there's nothing left of you to give anymore? Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like an extension of just being a mother, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an extension of being a mother. That's who we are. So what to share with the young people? That's one. but you can't always put yourself first either. How many times have we missed the tickets to the theater that we wanted to go to? Or people got used to, I love making and hosting big parties, I do. But many a time, many a pool party or whatever in my house, they'd say, Gail, you're going to get to stay today. I said, I don't know. My car was always full. I love
Yeah, that was the question when people would ask me, like, do you have a baby do? I'm like, I always have a baby do, like when you go to weddings and events as a community-based midwife, and that they would giggle, like, it was like, oh, you only had one lady this month. And I said, well, it's a 5-week window. Like, she still could go early, she could go late. Like, you're always having a backup plan for birth, but if you can everything outside of birth kind of have a little more boundaries and a little more structure to it, I think midwives just are like, you can call me at any time for anything. I think that's kind of part of helping with the burnout too.
And it is, and we do it. We do it, you know. And your husband is important.
Yes.
Yeah, because keeping husbands happy is, you know, some of the midwives like myself, when you become a midwife at 40, you become a different woman.
Yeah.
You don't have a schedule. You don't go to work at 8 and come home at 5 and make dinner, or you can't even keep a dinner date.
Yeah.
So you have to have a very special partner.
Yeah.
There is a high divorce rate in
That's what I was going to bring up. The support team is very powerful, because especially in the 50s, when the kids are out of the house, the divorce rate, I have a lot of conversations with ladies about financial planning and retirement and some challenges because they thought they were a rock with their family unit. And in about 50s, a high divorce rate phase is happening, unfortunately, with midwives.
Which is another reason to be a traveling midwife.
Yep.
You're cooling on here, because number one, they pay your expenses. You have a safe host place to stay. And they will show you around their environment, their town, and all the things we couldn't do for 30 years while our kids were growing up, or while we were gaining more confidence that we could do these things. So there's a, you know, I can also talk on how to have a good retirement, but
yeah, I mean, whatever you want to chat about today, we are all about it. I love your wisdom.
Yeah, well, it's I'm scattered in thinking, because sometimes I have so much to share. I don't know what your audience is looking for this time.
They want everything. I purposely talk about everything because it's all important. I mean, retirement, planning, professional, clinical evidence, everything's important. So you talk about whatever you would like to.
Well, yeah, I like to talk about, I guess, the choices and the benefits of just being a midwife.
Yes.
Because I have never regretted a day. It's a calling. I will do it for nothing. I have done it for nothing. I guess it's a lot of it I put in my book. For me, I'm not what you would call a Orthodox religious person. But birth for me is my spiritual orgasm. Because I make a joke with my clients, because, you know, when you're talking to them and you want to, like, when should we call you and all that stuff. And I say, now look, prenatal care is like foreplay. That's foreplay. And then, and then being and attending the birth is just more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my orgasm, my spiritual orgasm is birth. I said, if you don't call me on time and you have the baby without me, you only had me come and clean up the wet spot. So
I love it.
I'm not sure you want to share that with everybody, but
no, but that's great. I mean, it's everybody's analogy, but I love, like, it makes sense of the stages, and that's so funny.
And how can you miss, how, if when you miss the birth, you do feel inside a letdown, like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, you love the lady, you love the family, but you gave them so much confidence, they didn't call you a child. I said, that's not fair. you're going to make me miss it. So, yeah. So, but you know, the best midwife is the one that gets told by the family, "What the hell we pay you for? You didn't do anything. We love our birth. It was great. It was marvelous. You didn't do anything." I said, "Aren't I a good midwife?" Because
I know.
every expert make like if you want to learn to ski, looks easy when the expert's sailing down that hill. Oh man, we can do that. Now you put the skis on. Different story. Riding a horse. They're leaping over this fence and they're having a wonderful time and the horse is doing well. And you think, oh man, I'm gonna take be a horse ride. Then you get on a horse, right? So any expert looks like anybody can do it. And so when you meet somebody who makes it look simple and easy, whether it's the life they're living or the whatever, it's because they're good at it. So I think that's the highest compliment when somebody says, "Oh, what did you? You didn't do anything. You just sat there and talked to us." And I said, "Yeah, isn't it great?"
Yeah,
So
but
because
that's
you get
actually,
them.
it's a very powerful tool. People don't realize the non-interventions are the actual art and the skill of midwifery. It's having the skills when you need it and the boundaries of when to implement it. I was just talking with a few colleagues. We're working on a midwife school, and I was like, we need to have required knitting part of our curriculum, and we need to have like some like we're gonna make sure they know how to sit on their hands. We're gonna practice those intervention skills of like when do I pause and acknowledge. Like too many times we're teaching it, how to handle emergency. They're very good at children's socials and postpartum hemorrhages, but we're not teaching enough of when to not intervene. Like we're not in training people to think like this is normal and give it a minute. It's okay. Like we're teaching the other direction of, you know, it's okay if you add something, the worst that'll happen is she just didn't need that. That's the mantra and the paradigm that's happening of that out of hospital influence I'm seeing with the midwives and the doctors is, we'll just intervene and it didn't hurt anything, right? But it's it actually does.
It's back to the same thing. Doctors study crisis management. Midwives study the normal. The reason that we find early the abnormal is because we've studied the normal. Our normal, though, is very broad because of experience or because of learning from other midwives. Our normal and the variations of normal is broad. The doctors don't even know normal birth. They've never seen a normal birth because, as I said, you can have a vaginal birth in hospital, but not a normal birth. So they study crisis, and we need them in a crisis management. But if you study, it's like a, again, I keep relating this to motherhood. You know when you're, and your husband doesn't know this, when you're all sitting relaxing in front of the TV and the kids are in the back bedroom playing, and a mother says, "The kids are too quiet." And the husband says, "Kids, shh, leave them alone, leave them alone. We've got this time for ourselves." You say, no, they're too quiet." And you
Your
know what
spidey
that
sense
does.
goes up of they're into something because they're trying to hide it when
You're
they're usually
into something.
loud. Yes.
And see, those are the skills that women bring to birth. When it looks like she's just relaxing and that, and you can tell whether it's a good relaxing or there's something going on. And so all of those wonderful gifts we have, we're not strengthening them. We need to strengthen, we need ourselves to have more faith in birth. You cannot study fear. And that's what they're pushing on the young midwives today, is they're pushing them. I know some wonderful nurse midwives who give as much care as they can, another problem. It's not continuity of care. You can be the best midwife in the hospital, but you don't know the patient. You meet her at 8 a.m., you leave her at 5 p.m., you change the shift. That right there messes up her labor, because if you have bonded with that woman in those 8 hours and now you walk out on her, and you give her another loving, caring midwife or nurse, it's not right. It'd be like you and I just said to the woman, oh, I got to go home and make supper for the kids now. Yeah, you're 9 centimeters, but have a good birth. I'll talk to you in the morning. I can't imagine anything more horrific than that.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
And a mother doesn't do that. Oh, darling, you're upset. Well, I have to just go out to this party. I'm sorry. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah.
So all the caring things need to be reinforced. That would be a good workshop of how did caring change the birth, or how does it affect the birth? And how can we even support, like you say, a midwife that's burned out?
Mm-hmm.
How do we prevent her from getting burned out?
Yeah.
And it's all in caring for each other, not judging each other.
I don't
understand this judging. By the way, people that judge, it's because they want to prove to themselves they're better than that.
Yeah.
It's their protection. Oh, I wouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You weren't in the moment. You didn't know her story. You didn't know her last trauma. Like when we do peer reviews, it's so hard because everybody has an opinion. And I was like, you weren't in the thick of it. And now you know these things after the fact, like at this moment and knowing, okay, her history, her story, her, like what was really important to her and customizing things. Like it's interesting during peer reviews, like, is it really helping or is it just causing more apprehensive and fear-based case studies versus empowerment case studies?
Mm-hmm. Right. And like you said, I think this is a really important thing that we need to have workshops on, that we're losing it with the, you know, some people are calling the new young midwives med midwives. Mm-hmm. MED.
Yeah.
Because they're getting so much into the technology. Protocols are insisting they do this and they do that, and you know, I became a midwife, but that doesn't mean that I want to do what an OB does, do like fertility testing and cancer treatments. I don't want that. That's not my scope of practice. And I think that if we can keep the scope of practice that we serve healthy, healthy women but we don't want the crisis people. I'm quite happy to give somebody to a doctor if she's having quadruplets. I mean, you know, the OBs don't even want them. They give them to a neonatologist and a perinatologist. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so they don't even. So what can I say? I just love midwifery and I just have so much to share, but there's so many directions this conversation can go. Have you got something?
I think what's really passionate to me is breaking down all the barriers, because a lot of them are so interconnected. When we talk about making more midwives, sometimes there's barely any clinical sites, and then you're just grateful you have a clinical site. Like I, as a nurse midwife, I had to work really, really hard to get a home birth. So I try really hard to balance the CNM CPM. I had my three babies at home when I was 16. I started attending birth as a birth assistant for home birth. I chose nursing purely because of the regs in my state. And I was like, I don't know where it's going to go. I always dreamed of being an Amish home birth midwife. I live all around the Amish. My plan is to have a birth house when I retire to take care of them. So like, it's the deep innate being of who you are, but I had to work really, really hard as a nurse midwife to get a home birth, a birth center, a normal training experience that a lot of people just don't realize. Like I paid for her malpractice. I created the contracts because so maybe if you have some words of how we can create more normal experiences for training that are rarer and rarer, that are available.
Well, I think, first of all, in the apprenticeship way of doing it right now, I think attending births is the thing. Because I know that the nurse midwives, when they're trained, they don't get to attend many births. They do a lot of prenatal clinical work, but they don't actually get hands-on, where when I started my training, I didn't even know how to take blood pressures. First day I was in, she showed me how to do blood pressures, and then we did them on each other, and the next day I was doing blood pressures. Same thing with measuring bellies or palpating babies. You don't wait till you've done all your book learning. This is the mistake that doctors do. They do all their book learning first, and then they get to be a resident for another 4 years. Why can't they do book learning and being a resident? We could shorten the training time to teach our doctors, because they're called doctor before they've done much hands-on at all.
Yeah, I know. That's where it always makes me giggle when they brag how doctors have so much more experience than midwives, and that's why they're the experts and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but they've got a lot of hours in the book, but they don't have they don't have a lot of caring hours. Like, there should be a separation of not clinicals where they're reviewing cases and they're seeing 50 people in the clinic a day. Like, caring hours should be emphasized.
Well, and that's been taken away from them too by the insurance companies. You get 8 minutes with the patient or something like that.
Yeah.
So, again, we're back to this high tech stuff.
Yeah.
High tech, not high touch. And people today need high touch so badly. They're all hooked on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even our kids, you know? Yeah. And so, I don't know. Like, if I can't give up midwifery, I'll be doing it. Right now, I'm 81. I will be 82 in November.
Amazing.
And I've been doing this for 40 years. And I'm addicted.
Yeah.
How, not just a minute, how can you give up a spiritual orgasm? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, your deep passion, I mean, that's where I talk to a lot of midwives when they talk retirement. I said the definition of retirement is a shift in mindset. Like, you can still advocate in different ways. Maybe your body won't let you catch babies anymore, but your mind is so powerful. Like, I trying to get midwives, I just did a couple consults with people thinking about selling their birth centers, early 60s, and we were discussing transitioning into a different role in midwifery, because none of us ever, we are so deeply passionate that it's going to be, we'll be on our deathbed and be like, make sure Jane has this for her birth, you know, like as we're saying goodbye to our kids, because we're so deeply passionate.
If you ever want to have a workshop on that, I can help with that, because I've done it. And I am blessed that I have good health. But you, again, that's part of being a midwife. You got to keep yourself healthy, right? Yeah, we need a workshop on transitioning. We do, from being a new midwife. That's a transition right there. And then maybe moving into a partnership with others, or a transition from, if you're a CNM, and I helped a lot of CNMs transition to being a home birth midwife, because they also decided they couldn't work in the hospital anymore. And they had to have, it's amazing, they had to have a little more confidence, because they can't just open the door and yell down the hall for help. You know, you're the help. You can't open the door and say, anybody down there, you know, that has a C-section down.
Yes. It's especially because with the economy shifting, we've gotten, with my business consulting practice, a lot of nurse midwives have lost their jobs in the hospital. The department's closed. They don't want to move. They don't. I've got so many ladies, 3 years, two practices they've went through over and over again, because they just get juggled. And they're like, I want to do my own private practice. But community-based midwifery scares the average nurse midwife. Home Birth Academy is a wonderful new education platform. They opened about a year and a half ago, that's helping specifically nurse midwives that want experience and under, because it's like you said, you can't ask for the neonatal nurse practitioner to come and help with that baby. You are it. You've got to think differently. How long does it take for EMS to get there? You can turn them away, but if you need help, it's not like the OR is down the hallway. You have to plan and manage and think differently. And that's something the average nurse midwife in the hospital has never been exposed to. It makes them more anxious, like being around less resources, that illusion of control and that letting go. But yeah, I'm writing lots of notes, Gail, because you've got so many amazing ideas for workshops that we could definitely do in the future.
Yeah, I write, something popped into my mind and then it slipped out again. But this transition is important, because it's the confidence again. It's back to traveling midwives. There's another transition there. When you go to another country, there's nobody. You're in. And so how do you get assistance at birth? I have ways. How do you communicate with the powers that be? How do you give confidence? The other thing is, I don't think midwives talk enough to their clients. And for example, some of the early conversations I have with my clients, why do you want a home birth? All of those questions. But I say, you understand, I don't know your family, and but I do know the world. I said, if we have troubles and you're in a hospital and the baby dies, it's a tragedy. Mm-hmm. But if it does at home, they're going to blame you. And they're going to blame the mother. I say, they're going to blame you. They're going to say, if you're going to have that baby in the hospital. And that's not true. I have had some horrendous stories of, ooh, a baby was born with spinal bifida at home because she didn't want the ultrasounds. We didn't know it. We dealt with it. And somebody said, oh, well, you wouldn't have had spinal bifida if the baby hadn't have been born at home. I thought,
that makes no sense whatsoever.
But, that's the public. That's the public, because they don't know anything about medicine. I've had the same thing happen to a baby that was born with webbed fingers. Another baby was born with like two fingers that were half there. And they all got told, well, that wouldn't have happened if you'd have been seeing a doctor. So I said, the slightest. So again, you have to have special clients. You have to interview your clients well. And you have to, because your career depends on the education of your clients. Yep. So if we want to change the world, we can't change the world the way everybody's going about it now. Here's what we have to do. Number one, we need more childbirth classes. Out of hospital childbirth classes all over the world, because there's no childbirth classes here in Belize. There's no childbirth classes in many developing countries. Many people do not even go to a class. I want them to go to a class to study normal. I want them to know what normal birth is. That's education. You can't give them a choice if they don't even know the other choice.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to a hospital-based class, they only tell you what's going to happen to you in the hospital. You know, mm-hmm. when you come in, we're going to do this. And when you come in, we're going to do that. No. That's not the kind of education I'm talking about. The second thing is, you then need to have a friend that will go with you to the hospital. We now call them doulas, but we need to have doulas. But doulas that are trained different. The doulas that are trained now are taught, don't interfere with the staff. Absolutely wrong. Useless person. Absolutely useless person. If you can't go in to be an advocate, you cannot advocate for yourself when you are in labor. You need somebody that can advocate. Either that's the husband, but a lot of husbands aren't. But if you have one, if she doesn't fight for you and tell it, you cut her butt, and we're suing you. Because the mother can't see him pick up the scissors, but the doula can. Yeah. The doula needs to say, that was negotiated. You know, here's what you can do. So we need an assertive, trained bunch of doulas. And then the other, if you educate the consumer on their choices, money talks. We can't change the hospital policies, protocol, or the doctors until the money is involved. So if you find a good doctor or a good hospital that is open, you feed that hospital. You feed that doctor. You go to him for ultrasounds, any little thing, gift you can give him. You go to him to consult. You refer him. When everybody starts going to that doctor or that hospital, the other hospitals are going to change.
Yeah.
We cannot just go into the hospital and say, oh, you need a water birth and you need this and you need that and you need a rope from the ceiling and you need to feed them and all the wonderful things that we do at home. They just look at you like you're crazy, Marty. We ain't got any budget for that. We got any time for that. And we don't even believe that it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So the consumer has to create the change, not us midwives. Not the doulas. We are not going to create change. It has to be the consumer. When the consumer says, I'm going to XYZ hospital because XYZ listened to my friend and my friend's friend and my friend and Dr. So-and-so, I'm going to him. Well, how come you didn't come to me? Because you don't do what I need. And I'm taking my money and my insurance policy over there. So it's got to get back. You got to get back to the old business skills. We cannot change doctors. We cannot change hospitals, but we can change the consumer.
Well, and I've noticed that politically, because with lobbying and the games to make regulations more independent and better for midwives, it's the states where the consumers got heavily involved in the petitions and the involvement for the community-based midwives that you got the biggest impact. It wasn't how much money you threw at the lobbyists. You still had to fight the AMA, but when the consumers, the public was directly talking to the politicians, the local representatives, and the voting power, it was amazing to see the differences. And across the United States, certified professional midwives, licensed midwives are getting way more tread than nurse midwives because we're grouped with NPs, we're too much in the medical. Like, I'm seeing big paved ways for CPMs because of the consumer advocacy component side.
Yes. Yeah, it has to be changed because I hate to say it, money talks and politics talk. The vote is priceless. And we can't change the establishment, we have to change the consumer. And so when you have a mom that you've served and she loves you, you've got to make her an activist as well. I know if she's got a new baby and she maybe can't get out and march down the street, but she can sure send some emails and she can sure just spread news to her girlfriend. That's another thing. I wish we would have more women brag about their home births, but you know what? We've been taught not to brag. As a consumer, if you go to a women's tea party and or a coffee klatch, and they're all talking about their problems they had with their birth, and you say, "Oh, I didn't have any of those problems. I ate 5 eggs and 6 bananas when I was in labor, and blah blah blah." And no, they didn't cut my bottom. You know what the other women that were abused get mad,
They
and
asked
so
yourself.
we have been taught not to tell the truth. We have been taught to be quiet because if you tell them how good your birth was, you're just gonna make them mad, and it's
Feel
true.
bad and
So let me give one way they can help. This is what I teach all my clients. When they're in the grocery store and your belly is there, or they've just got a new baby, and they see a pregnant lady in line or in the store. "Oh my goodness, you're having a baby. Look, I just had mine. And who's your midwife?" And the woman goes, "Midwife? No, I'm going to OB so and so." You say, "Oh my, what's wrong?"
And that's the way it should be, the cultural where they're thinking that's in a logical sense, that's how it should be. And I love it. I love
Teach you,
it.
but teach your clients to say that. Teach them. You can spread the word that midwife. "Oh, well, no. Who's your midwife? Because normal birth is handled by midwives, and you're going to an OB. What's wrong?" And
I love
they'll
it.
say,
Yeah, we could make a big like scripts for promoting normal birth for our clients and things of how to handle after the baby and during pregnancy, common tension when people ask you questions. I love that. So I could talk to you for hours and hours, Gail. We've got about 3 more minutes left. What would be some high level, you have immense experience and knowledge. What would be your highlights for just midwives? Either they're just starting out, they're well into their prime, they're thinking about being a midwife. What would be some advice you want to give high level to those ladies? Just, I know you've got so much to give.
I guess it would depend on the age that they're all that enthusiasm. I have to admit that if you're in your 20s and you want to be a midwife, go be a nurse midwife because you can do it on shifts. You can raise your children. You can get a guaranteed income, a guaranteed salary, and gain confidence and get pissed off as you're there, so that by the time you're 40, you're ready to exit. You have confidence. You've seen what you don't like. You've studied home births maybe a little bit. But for economics, for strictly economics, as if you're 20, you need to be a nurse midwife. Only to work in the hospital. Not because I believe it. I'm just saying to get into, because you can't be 20 years old and learn business skills and being a midwife and have confidence. And at 20 years old, a 40-year-old woman doesn't want to come to a 20-year-old midwife. I hate to say that. But they don't. Okay, so midwives are supposed to be old people. They're supposed to be, at least in their 30s and have one or two babies. It's very hard, I think, on young people to be an out-of-hospital midwife at 22, never had a baby, don't have a husband. There's a niche maybe for, the 17-year, but I'm saying it's an evolution.
Yeah.
And in today's world, go be a nurse midwife. It'll give you a guaranteed salary. It'll give you a guaranteed insurance. It'll give you guaranteed shift work so you can have a family life and your husband and all that. Then in your 40s, shift. Do another transition. If you're 40 already, you come my way.
Yeah.
You know, direct entry midwife. Mm-hmm. Because you're at 40, you're the roaring 40s. You're ready. You're a woman activist. You wouldn't have been drawn to midwifery if something hadn't given you that, you know, your granddaughter or your daughter had a bad birth. So at 40, you can go direct midwifery. But at 20, for family peace and family love, go nurse midwifery.
Okay.
And then evolve into home birth. And look, at I'm 80. I still got 40 years of being a home birth midwife. My career didn't end 10 years after I became a midwife, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't quit at 50. I got helped. And I blossomed. And now I'm traveling the world and having cultural experiences. And I got so many homes, I don't even have to have a home anymore. And
yeah,
I keep in touch. I've delivered babies of the baby I delivered. What nurse midwife gets to do that? I delivered my own grandchild and a great grandchild. What? How can you quit this?
Yeah.
My blood, to my hands. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, Gail,
I want to cry every time I talk to midwives.
Well, I am the same way. I just think you are amazing, and we need to get more midwives to have the deep, legendary knowledge and experience and want to still continue to give, no matter what situations in life brings. Like, that's part of when I talk a lot of times to midwives about your zen, your deep passion. When you figure out why you chose midwifery, nothing can stop you. Because, like, initially when I was 16, I was like, oh, it's a pivotal moment. I'm hugely about woman empowerment. And as time goes on and you learn yourself, you're like, I can catch babies and I can be good at that, but my strength is the large scale, so everybody has access to this. So I think once you figure out what draws you to midwifery and why you want to be a midwife and you find that deep passion, nothing can stop you, and it'll continue for many years to come. So thank you so much, Gail. I'm going to put all your contact information underneath the video, so if they want to reach out to you, they want to get your book, I appreciate everything you've done for midwifery, Gail.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking about it.
Thanks.